Welcome back to Birds of a Feather Talk Together. This week we talk about a bird that may be a link back to the dinosaurs, the Watson. There's so many unique things about this bird, from their cow-like stomach to their blue dinosaur-like face to the fact that they are very stinky. These birds are truly in a category of their own. Our co-hosts John Bates and Shannon Hackett teach Amanda and I all about these birds, and Jacob Drucker joins us again as well. We start off talking a little bit about European goldfinches, but then get into the Watson soon after. Okay, go grab your binoculars and let's get started.
God, that list of introduced birds in Hawaii is...
The sand grouse is my favorite. My two favorites are...
What the hell is... I looked at that and I'm like, that's got to be a lie.
Chestnut-bellied sand grouse and Mariana swiftlet.
What?
Yeah. The way the birds were introduced too is crazy. Most of the introductions started because all the native birds were gone. And the European settlers said, all the birds are gone. We need birds. People bring your birds. There's like a bird club.
I mean, that was true in New York and Long Island. There were bird clubs there dedicated to bringing birds from Britain out to North America. Hence starlings and house sparrows. But
were there European goldfinches in New York at one point that didn't make it, right?
So
we'll have Louise on to talk about those too.
So New York and Long Island. I think Long Island
they taught them to play card games. The finches to play card games. And they did.
Wait, are you serious?
I'm 100% serious.
I still don't understand.
And there's
that.
Ancient recipes, not that ancient, recipes for food, how to make in your kitchen food that European goldfinches like. And I keep thinking I'm going to make it for Louise's defense. I'm going to make one of those recipes for European goldfinch food. It looks horrible, and I'm sure it doesn't taste good to people. But there's a whole cookbook associated with
that's crazy.
Oh with gosh. European goldfinches.
That's hilarious.
People are weird.
Yeah. All right. Well, should we get into the am I saying it right? The Watson?
Yep.
Okay. So Shannon, you suggested doing this bird, and I wasn't familiar with it. And the more we've been researching, we're so excited.
Watson is one of the most interesting birds. I know I said that about Balaniceps, the shoebill, too, but I think Watson.
I think you've said that about five or six things.
Yeah, okay, that's true.
They're all exciting.
Yes. So I wanted to always put in these podcast things that nobody's ever heard of for the most part, and Watson is one of those birds that's really most people don't know about, and if they did, they'd be completely and utterly fascinated by it. People, when they see it, and this is true when you're showing them in the collections too, they think it's Archaeopteryx or an Archaeopteryx relative because the bird is so bizarre looking. It's kind of a squat little chubby thing with a tiny head that has this giant red crest out the back of it and blue skin on its face.
Mm-hmm. It looks like a dinosaur.
It looks exactly like a dinosaur, which is why people think it's Archaeopteryx, or that Archaeopteryx looked like that. And a lot of renditions of Archaeopteryx are very similar to what Watson looks like. But it lives in the New World tropics and over water. And one of the reasons why it's so interesting and fascinating is that its babies have claws on the wing to help them climb around the trees and not fall in the water. So that's another thing that makes it look prehistoric too. Archaeopteryx had claws, and this thing has, these babies have claws. So they're cool from the start, and they only get cooler after that because their position in the tree of life is tortured. And in fact, even genomically, we still do not have very strong support for where they go. They've gone, I had to make a list. They've gone in the tree of life with almost everything that you can think of. They've been in with tinamous, pheasants, rails, bustards, sariemas, sand grouse, doves, turricos, and other cuckoos, shorebirds, cranes. And the reality is that they might be with shorebirds and cranes, but the data are only weakly suggest that. So it's kind of a true enigma in every sense of it, of the word. It looks like itself and like absolutely nothing else. You're going to look at that bird, you're not going to have any idea what it's related to. So it's just so bizarre. And it also, as I dominate the conversation, it also eats leaves for the most part. Its vast diet is made of leaves. So it basically is a ruminant, just like cows
it's basically a small cow.
And are there any other birds that are like that? Or is that strictly like...
Not in the same way.
Okay.
And the singularity of it's just amazing because there's just this one species that's not closely related to basically anything else.
Yeah, it's tens of millions of years old as a group. So it's not, you know, it's very old. At when all of the families of birds kind of came into being, the Huatzin did too. And it didn't come in with anything else, not obviously with anything else. It's kind of on its own as we try to figure out the bird tree of life. But yeah, imagine that. There's a bird that's a ruminant. So it has a crop that's full of bacteria that are found there and almost nowhere else, and an incredible range of bacteria. That microbiome of that bird has been looked at, and there are 1,400 what are called OTUs, or operational taxonomic units. That's different variants that could be species of bacteria, which is 3 to 4 times more than most vertebrates would have, of which 96% can't be identified to a described bacteria.
Oh, wow.
So it is on its own in, and that varies with the age. There's this really cool study done where they looked at the microbiome of birds at varying stages of development too. And there's a lot of variance as the birds grow. So you can't, and you know, humans don't do this. We're not very good at getting stuff out of plants. Leaves are a tough thing to actually get nutrients out of. And if you're going to only eat that, you got to be like a cow. You have to develop a system so they have a crop. And I don't think they make crop milk, but they have a whole host of bacteria. You know, I think of it like a witch's brew in Macbeth that is happening inside of the of that bird's.
And so they don't move around a ton because of that, right?
Well,
because they're
so that's an interesting aspect of this that I find fascinating about them, which is that, again, you would think for a bird that is that primitive, and if you actually see them, they look like they couldn't fly across a small stream. I mean, they literally have these rounded wings and long tails, and they look like they're just going to drop into the water, and yet they're found all the way through the entire Amazon basin, the Orinoco basin, and they even get around the upper edges of the Guianas in terms of their distribution. And nobody's ever done a genetic study looking at them, which I think would be really fascinating, because a hypothesis for a bird that seems to disperse that poorly would be that there would be tons of structure. And it won't surprise me if there's actually almost none, that they actually somehow maintain connectivity and gene flow or something. I don't know. I mean, they're definitely a very enigmatic bird in that sense.
And they stink.
Yeah,
they're called a stink bird for real. And you can smell it in the specimens if you go smell
in the specimens.
It.
You can smell it, really.
Yeah. Wow. They smell like poop.
Yeah,
and that's because of their digestive system.
Yeah. And they really do smell, even if they've been in the collection for decades. They still smell.
Oh,
have
wow.
you seen one live?
I have, yeah.
Really?
Did you smell it?
I was too far away. Or maybe I was too smelly that it overpowered.
Yeah, humans at that point can press heat.
The Watson's like, did you see that, Jacob?
Yeah.
they live in places that are generally hot and sweaty for people.
Yep. Definitely.
Yeah.
So their habitat is completely along low-lying rivers, river edge, very hot. I was going to say, now we've prepped specimens of them, and they definitely smell. They also have things like they've got one of the largest avian feather lice that anybody knows of. It's this thing called Lemobothrian, which is a lot of feather lice. You have to get a microscope, not a microscope, but a hand lens out to be able to make sure that they're actually lice. And this Lemobothrian are about the size of a middle-sized ant. So they're really big. And they're only found on Hoatzins.
Wow.
Yeah, the species. Yeah.
Crazy.
So, I mean, they're fascinating.
Yeah.
The vocalization of them is... I'm trying to think how I would even describe it. It's like somebody choking to death or something.
Really?
Yeah. Just kind of.
Yeah, they're weird in every conceivable way.
John, have you've seen them in the wild?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not. You get on major river courses in Amazonia, and you get into the edges over water, as Shannon was saying, and they're not uncommon.
Wow.
And so they're just incredible birds.
So do you have to go out on trees to capture them? Do they get into mist nets, or you have to shoot them? Oops. Are we allowed to do that?
You collect them with a shotgun.
Okay. Yeah, that's an interesting project.
And do the chicks swim?
They do. They swim really well. Yeah. So they in addition to having these claws, apparently they
climb back
really
up the
well.
Trees with their claws. So when they fall in the water, they can get back up.
And my guess is...
And there's videos of that. It's adorable.
Right. If the adults go into the water, they can actually get themselves moving along pretty well, too.
Oh, yeah?
You think so?
Yeah.
Think they'd drown? I'm not so sure they could get themselves out of water. They can't fly from the water.
They can probably... I would maybe guess that they could kind of foist themselves through the water to something to latch on. It wouldn't be elegant.
No,
it wouldn't be elegant, but it would be like, and there've been some interesting, like there was I can't remember where I saw this video, but it was of one of the big frog mouths landing in the water and then actually getting itself out. And I think we don't necessarily appreciate what some of these birds are capable of doing once they get in the water. And I think if you've evolved like they have to live over water and they're incredibly consistent in that for perspective. So like there are other birds that live along rivers in South America. So greater anis, which are these big black cuckoos. They live along the water, but they also go through these really strange, poorly understood movements where they'll travel through terra firma forest, so upland forest. But a Hoatzin, I don't think would ever do that. So their entire world is they're almost like fish where they're moving up and down the river drainages.
But they clearly are because they have such a big distribution.
Yeah.
So you would, if you looked at their wings, you wouldn't guess they could do that. But when you look at a lot of rails who are on all of these oceanic islands and you look at their wings and you're just, how on earth, how is it doing that?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem at all like it has the kind of wings that should get them out there.
Yeah.
But they're there all the time. So much extinction of rails on islands with these little tiny rounded wings.
Do the Hoatzin adults have the claws on their wings, or
no.
they lose them when they're...
They lose them.
Okay.
Yeah, they have to use other means to climb up a tree.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
They can fly, I suppose. But so Hoatzins are just full of questions that lead to more questions.
Yeah,
an elusive search for an answer, especially in the Tree of Life. It's been a really interesting thing to watch people want to solve that problem, you know, desperately want to solve that, go out trying to solve that. And you can get all the, in fact, we've gotten all the data, the whole entire genomes don't solve with any confidence where Hoatzins go in the Tree of Life.
And there are a few other birds out there that eat plants. Like there's this group of birds in South America called plant cutters, which do that. But again, I don't think there's anything that has the degree of adaptation. I mean, at some level, geese are plant eaters too. Mm. They're grazers. And so they have to digest cellulose and things. But Hoatzins take it to another level.
So this is a really dumb question, and I don't know, like you might laugh. But are they like a link back to dinosaurs?
I mean, I like to describe it as yes and no, and
that's committal.
Well, I mean, it's what the term is, an atavism, right? So it's and there's some neat things in developmental biology which have been shown using chick embryos, where they've done things like if you take a chick embryo and you keep the parietal bones from growing together, you get a reptilian snout as opposed to a bill.
Hmm.
And if you keep the radius and ulna from growing together in chick embryos, you get all the carpal and bones and a wrist that you would get in a lizard.
Oh, wow.
And so what's probably happening here is you've got the expression of something that is actually in the genes of birds that's been turned off from their reptilian history, but it's still embedded in the billions of base pairs of DNA that they have in ways that can potentially get turned on if it's selected for and shows up as a mutation. You know, it gets the process, you know, and so.
Do they use that facial skin? Is it part of the display? What do they do with it? Nothing?
I mean, I don't know how, whether anybody's, I mean, they're actually kind of hard birds to sit around and watch. Not that I think nobody's done it, but I can't think of a, like, I don't know that people have watched courtship in Hoatzins. It wouldn't surprise me that nobody has.
You need a boat.
Yeah, you need a boat, and you need to spend a lot of time in that boat. Mm. And they can also, it's funny because they're not inconspicuous, but at the same time, that vegetation is often pretty dense, and so they can kind of squirrel off into the branches and you can't see them suddenly. And so I don't know. I've got the feeling that the behavior is not all that well studied.
Hmm. I was part of a genomic study from the group called the B10K or Bird10K, and that paper was published from this consortium two years ago somewhere. And again, the Hoatzin is an enigma in that even. And it was so interested. A reporter, his name is Ben Crer, he wrote a piece on the Hoatzin for New Yorker magazine that came out in July of 2022. And so if anybody wants to know more or wants to hear all of us express our confusion and amusement at one of the most interesting birds in the world. Mm. You'll find it over and over and over and over in that piece that everybody's like, yeah, I don't know. We can't figure this out. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. But everybody's fascinated by this bird.
Yeah.
They are birds, right? We know that.
We know that.
We do know that.
Okay.
So the first branch of birds are the ducks and geese and things like that. Well, the first branch are the ratites, the ostriches. And then once you get into a group called Neoaves oryza birds, that we have ducks and chickens. And then after that, there was a massive radiation of lineages of birds whose relationships are pretty tricky to resolve. And so that happens when you get bursts of diversification over very short periods of time, a very long time ago. That's a really hard problem for any set of characteristics to try to resolve. And Hoatzin is part of that, and it's not amenable to a lot of data. There's going to be something else, maybe, but otherwise it's going to stay fairly enigmatic for...
Would you say that's the KT boundary?
Oh, geez.
Which is the extinction that led to the demise of the dinosaurs.
Oh.
It's there was a asteroid that hit the Earth and basically wiped out lots of things. And as I'm saying this, I'm just thinking it hit somewhere off Yucatan and probably killed everything for maybe thousands of miles in any direction. And so it makes you wonder whether one of the reasons why Hoatzins were allowed to sort of evolve was because they were...
All the plants died.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing. I mean, there's a lot of...
That's my hypothesis, and I'm sticking with it.
There is debate about when, you know, modern birds kind of came with respect to that big mass extinction event. A lot of the early work using DNA and other molecular data suggested, and we date that with a molecular clock, just like your clock ticks, mutations tick, and in theory we can count those mutations ticking and go back in time and figure out when these two things last shared a common ancestor. And a lot of DNA work showed that to be well before the fossil record talked about these birds being in existence.
Oh,
and so
okay.
There's a time lag. Some of that makes sense. It takes a while for things to fossilize and a while to find the fossils. So that there's a difference isn't surprising, but some of these differences were really substantial.
Hmm.
And so the idea that that many birds pre-existed this dinosaur extinction event, I don't think that's really the case, but they certainly, a lot of them came into being at roughly the same time.
Oh.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think we're getting close on time. So we got one mailbag question, then we'll wrap it up. So this is from Pam from Steamboat Springs, Colorado. And Pam says, I saw a story online about a parrot that went missing as a pet for a couple years. It was found 2 years later and learned how to speak Spanish. Could this be true?
100% it's true. And it probably spoke Spanish in the accent of the person who had it. Almost certainly. And we will bring on another one of our students. His name is Taylor, studies parrots. And parrots are bizarre. And people have done really bizarre things to parrots, too. You think pigeons are weird? Parrots are weird, too. But yeah, that's absolutely true. They're
really
incredible mimics. And don't forget that parrots are the closest living relatives of the cardinal you have in your backyard. So the Tree of Life has taught us that. And there's really interesting questions about vocal learning that come from knowing the Tree of Life.
Oh, it'd be awesome to do a full episode on that.
It would. And mimicry is a really fascinating thing across birds. And again, as Shannon's saying, parrots are very good at mimicking particularly human voices. And so they would pick up accents.
In context, too. It's like they're not just saying random things. I used to look after, there was a bird researcher at Louisiana State University, and I used to look after his house when he would go away, and he had a parrot, an African gray parrot. And he also had someone who helped him clean his house, and her name was Consuela. And if you knocked on the door, the bird would say, Consuela, like saying hello to Consuela. And after I looked after that place for a while, it started speaking things in my voice, and it was completely and utterly freaky, and I did not like it because I don't like my own voice kind of in general. But it was so weird to hear words coming out of this bird's mouth that sound just like you.
Oh my gosh.
He, when Consuela would come, John O'Neill would go, and he had a Volkswagen, and the bird would mimic the sound of his Volkswagen. So after Consuela came in, the bird would mimic a Volkswagen, which has a very characteristic sound, you know, a little VW bug. And the bird would mimic the sound as he as he left. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, they're super interesting. Their brains are really interesting. Vocal learning is really interesting. And the idea that they're doing it in context is really fascinating.
That's crazy that they do it in context. Like, I always knew that they learned words and things like that, but to be able to place it in context, that's fascinating.
We can talk about Alex, which is this African gray parrot that was a research subject of a behavioral researcher for, 50 years or so, and probably and knew over 1,000 words, I think.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, just,
Very cool.
So, yes, if you get a parrot, you can expect it to
learn
Spanish. Some parrots. Not all parrots.
Yeah, okay. If you get an African gray parrot, you can expect
Budgie is not going to ever
talk in your own voice.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right. Well, John, do you want to close it out?
Oh, let's see. Parrots.
No, Hwatzins.
Oh, yeah. So, Hwatzins. Yeah.
There's to the jungles of South America take a chance.
Take a boat ride up the Amazon and
hold your nose.
Yeah, and hold your nose and
get ready to sweat.
Absolutely wonderful birds.
Cool. We did
Good
it.
Work, everybody.
Woo! We did it.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We want to reach out to you, our listeners, the bird brains, because we want to spread the word, but don't know how to get the word out there. If you have newsletters, email lists, or any experience marketing, we'd love some help. We continue to get great feedback from all of our fans, and we'd love the chance to spread Birds of a Feather Talk Together even further and help educate even more people on all of these amazing birds. If you have any ideas, please contact us at podcast.birdsofafeather@gmail.com or reach out to us on Instagram. Please share our episodes on social, via email, word of mouth, or any way that you feel comfortable. Thanks to Earhole Studios in Chicago. Shout out to Adam and Daniel for helping us record. We're going to be down for the next couple weeks over the holidays, but we'll be back in the new year with some new episodes. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and please get out there and do a Christmas bird count.